Tarlehurst End podcast.
By Reading fans, for Reading fans.
Hello and welcome to the Tarlehurst End weekend preview. After two successive away defeats that have left Reading 2 points adrift in the relegation zone, Paul Clement is on the brink with two home games to potentially save his job. My name is Ollie Allen, your host for today's show, and I'm pleased to say that I'm joined once again by the Working in Papers, Tom Crocker. How's it going, Tom?
Hi, Ollie. Not too bad, thank you. Just got back from Hogwood this afternoon. It's been a busy press conference, but yeah, like you say, two more defeats to contemplate, I think.
So I was reading the live updates of that press conference from Hogwood. Sounds very interesting. A lot of injury news that we'll get onto in the second part of the show. But I was going to start with Paul Clement. There's been quite a bit of speculation, really, since the 2-0 defeat to Swansea last weekend. On Sunday, The Sun published a piece claiming that Reading would be keen to bring in Steve Bruce, of course, sat by Aston Villa a couple of weeks ago, to replace Paul Clement. This sort of started a flurry of discussion on social media about who Reading's next manager would be. John Keane actually wrote a piece for the Tarlehurst End on sort of how the club should be should approach appointing a new manager. And it was a bizarre situation, really. I mean, I've never seen sort of so much speculation about the manager's position with the manager still in the job. It was almost as if Clement was as good as gone. But I mean, barring a sacking on Friday, which would be even stranger, I mean, he is now going to get this Bristol City game this weekend. And how crucial does that make this game then, Tom? Obviously, is it a case of losing, he's gone, or do you think he'll get next week against Ipswich 2 and then sort of a decision might be made in the international break?
Yeah, I think all eyes are towards that international break, really. But obviously, if Saturday they get well beaten and it's not looking like it's going to turn around, then it would maybe be a bit of a waste of time to keep him just for one more game if you know you're looking around. But I guess if you can give him this Saturday's game, see how it goes, and then maybe have a look around in the week leading up to the Ipswich game in case that goes badly as well, and then they can make a change there so they're ready to act straight away, maybe, might be the way about it. But yeah, I think Paul Clement knows this Saturday, he's not looking beyond this Saturday at all. He knows how big this game is. He said picking the teams, giving him sleepless nights. You know, it's a huge game for the club. And yeah, he's not stupid. He's fully aware of the situation. He's won 3 games all season in the league. They're back in the relegation zone again, like you say. And yeah, I think it is very much a case of, I say, it was strange to see all the names coming out of Lincoln with the job and sort of reluctant to go into it too much, just because he is still the man that we're speaking to every week at the moment, and he's still the man in the hot seat. So you have to hope he can turn it around, and if he wins these next 2 games, then suddenly you look at it and things will look a little bit better, and maybe he can try and turn it around that way. But yeah, obviously those names are going to fly around. Steve Bruce is one, which whilst he's out of work, I'm sure quite a few championship clubs will be looking to see whether he could be a man to come in for them. So yeah, there's names out there, but I think Clements, I think he'll still have 2 more games at least, unless Saturday goes particularly badly and they put in another awful home performance. Obviously, it's like I say, it's a home game, so the fans won't be any escaping the home fans there. So yeah, I think all eyes on Saturday. Clement knows they need to get a result and a performance, otherwise he's going to be on very, very thin ice, I think.
I remember it was sort of around this time last season that Yap Stam's job sort of looked as though it might be hanging by a thread, and then he got those back-to-back wins against Nottingham Forest and Derby that sort of saved himself for a little bit longer. And these two home games now, you know, against a Bristol City side who's sort of mid-table and Ipswich, who are bottom of the table and on really poor form, and obviously changed managers themselves recently. But, you know, these two games now do present sort of that similar opportunity for Paul Clement, you know, especially now. I think teams around Reading have sort of picked up wins in recent weeks. Hull won last weekend, Millwall have won 2 in a row, and Preston are unbeaten in 5, and very quickly Reading could be cut adrift on.
Yeah, and then of course on the flip side, you can say if they can do it, Reading could do it as well, like you say, of those two wins. And if they get those two back-to-back wins, they'll probably they'll be out the bottom 3, I would imagine, and looking upwards, hopefully. So yeah, it can turn around pretty quickly. But yeah, like you say, they with the 2-point gap there now, you can't really afford to lose this weekend, and one of those teams above you wins and suddenly it is a bit of a gap, and then there will be a bit of a panic setting. And I think especially obviously the Ipswich game after that, if they come there with a new manager and show they've got a new manager bounce and get a win, then it's going to surely be tempting for Reading to go down a similar route and try and get a new manager in to turn things around. So yeah, it's a good opportunity. I think that's the way they've got to look at it. It's two home games against sides that you can beat, and hopefully that's the way they approach it, rather than sitting there thinking about how bad the home form's been this season and last season to a large extent, and worrying about all that. So yeah, it can turn around quickly. I think that's going to be the main message from that. And But all the talking is for nothing really if they go and put in a similar performance on Saturday and lose. Say Paul Clement spoke fairly well today. I'd spoke to Liam Moore as well, and he's always good to talk to and doesn't sort of cover up anything. They know how big this game is, but like Liam Moore said as well, it's pointless talking about it if you don't do it on Saturday. Then it's just a waste of time, and you lose more ground in the league, and suddenly you're in a relegation battle and cut adrift a little bit. So yeah, they've got to get something on Saturday, especially in that Ipswich game as well. I think if they don't get, less than 4 points from that, I think you've got to be worrying. And yeah, I think the players and the manager know that as well.
I said on the main podcast earlier this week that sort of a loss in either of these two games might not really be good enough. But as you said, the talking does have to be done on the pitch. The bookmakers do have Bristol City down as the favourites for this one at 5-4. Interestingly, actually, Reading are as good a value for a win as a draw is, and both of those outcomes are 23-10. Courtesy of odds checker, hashtag gamble aware. Those are probably just about fair from my point of view. I think we'll talk predictions a little bit later on, but I'd say an even game with Bristol City probably is the slight favourites based on league position is fairly spot on.
Yeah, it's obviously we're meant to be specifically previewing one team each week on it, but it seems like so many of these games are all so similar that their home game that Reading can win, and they generally don't seem to. But yeah, the odds are, I think, are fair. It's a winnable game, but it's very easily a losable game for them as well. I'm sure Bristol City will be fancying their chance of coming and getting a win. I think they won here last year as well, if I remember rightly, definitely a couple of years ago. Yeah, so yeah, it's a game that they'll be looking at. So they're mid-table, they've got a decent side still, and yeah, I think the odds are pretty fair. It's a pretty even game, and it's obviously a cliche, but the first goal is always crucial with teams in Reading games. They've only won 3 games all season. If they fall behind at home with the way the situation is with the manager, it's hard to see him turning it around with the form and state they're in at the moment and mentally. So it's it's certainly a big one. It probably won't be a particularly great spectacle just the way the Reading are playing, and they've got to grind out the win. Back to basics, I think, hopefully. Obviously, you've said it before, but yeah, home game against Bristol City, you've got to look at it as one as, say, a mid-table team, home game. If you can't be winning that one, then yeah, it's just going to be a long, old struggle, I think.
I think it was Aidan Flint who got the goal last season. Obviously, he's left now, so that threat isn't there anymore. But yeah, I think it was September time, I think, at home to Bristol City last season, sort of started off quite a bad run of defeats. It is now time then for the view from the town end, where we get the thoughts of a Bristol City fan ahead of Saturday's game.
The view from the town end. What do the opposition think?
View from the town end time then, and as Reading prepare to host Bristol City on Saturday, I'm pleased to say that I'm joined by Robins fan Paul Binning, otherwise known as the Exiled Robin on Twitter and from the One Stream in Bristol podcast. How's it going, Paul?
Good, thanks. Yeah, really good.
I was going to start with how the season's gone for you guys so far. I mean, as an onlooker, it sort of seems to be a bit of an up and down one for Bristol City so far. I mean, you win any of your first 3 games, then went on a run of 4 wins in a row, then 5 games without a win, and then 2 wins from your last 3 games, which places you 11th in the table, winning 3 points off the playoffs.
Yeah, I think, well, you said it all really there, yeah. I think the phrase which, you know, seems to spring to mind amongst fans at the moment is we are consistently inconsistent. And yeah, we have these little runs. We look very good in some games. Swansea away, Blackburn especially. Funny enough, in the second half against Stoke on Saturday, even though we lost. And then other games where we just look absolutely dreadful and can't string a pass together and can't create a chance. So, it's been a funny start to the season. We appear to be a little bit tighter than we were last year defensively. Yeah. A little bit less free-flowing maybe, but I do sense that's where Lee Johnson wants to get us still, and get us playing that sort of football. And again, signs in the second half against Stoke on Saturday, we were getting there. But yeah, it's just, I think we're probably exactly where we deserve to be, really. Smack bang in the middle of the table, a few points off the top 6, and we are probably a little bit off them. But hopefully, and probably just about, you know, good enough not to be sucked into any sort of relegation battle.
I mean, you certainly don't want to be down there. I mean, obviously, being down there ourselves, it's not pretty at all. But last season, obviously, was a very good one for Bristol City. I mean, you earned a lot of plaudits by reaching the semi-finals of the Carabao Cup, and we're very much sort of in the mix for the playoffs for virtually all of the championship season, really, before dropping off in those last couple of games. What was the expectation like coming into this season? Obviously, was there a feeling the playoffs needed to be a target again, or obviously there was the sales of, you know, Aidan Flint, Joe Bryant, and Bobby Reid? Did that sort of temper expectations slightly?
Yeah, I think it did. I think there was a very realistic view on things. That I think two things really. One is that we were probably overachieving when we were in the top two, top three for a lot of the first half of our season, and we probably ended up a little lower than we deserved. But over 46 games, that's probably not really the case. You end up where you should be. So yeah, I think you kind of you finish mid table. You kind of been up there all season. You would normally be really pushing for a playoff place, but as you say, I think sale of our sort of three best players, in inverted commas, some would argue otherwise, but three good players who went to all clubs above us, and you've got to rebuild again, you've got to bring different players in. And I mean, it's not just that we've actually done one or two other moves as well. For instance, this year we're playing with pretty much an entire new back five, so our goalkeeper and four defenders, they were even not at the club or didn't play any games last season, so that takes some time to gel. And losing Bobby Reid, we obviously lost 20 odd goals, and we're trying to find those goals from somewhere else. Not to mention Aidan Flint's goals, who always chipped in with 8, 10, 12 goals a season as well, which is a fantastic return for a centre half. So we're missing 30 goals, and I think it's starting to show a little bit. We're a bit tighter, but we're staying in games by not conceding too many and managing to nick a few 1-0.
Lee Johnson, Mr. Man in the dugout, he's actually the second longest serving manager in the Championship, having been in charge since February 2016. And he's certainly sort of an example of how keeping faith with a manager during a rough patch, as Reading are in at the moment, and sort of showing how keeping faith with that manager does end up working in the end. What is the sort of general feeling towards him at the moment? Is he still the man to take the club forward?
Yeah, I think Lee Johnson's got a bit of a checkered history and reputation with City fans. He was obviously a player with us back in the sort of late the last decade. Very much a Marmite player, and he himself has a chuckle to himself. I think there's a lot of players who rated his job, and a lot who saw him as only really playing because his dad was manager, and he didn't really do anything really other than pass the ball sideways would be the accusation. So he kind of came in with a little bit of a group of fans who probably were prepared to give him a little less time than they might do others, but I don't think you can't doubt his passion. You can't doubt he's got a clear idea about what it is he wants to do. And you can't argue with, on paper at least, the fact that we are progressing as a team. We have steadily progressed over the last 3 years since he's been there in terms of league position. I think what some would doubt is whether he's capable of taking us beyond this point. Can we get up beyond 10th or 11th in the league? He tries to play a very high press type of football, very clear style there that he tries to do. But then that goes missing. It goes back to the inconsistent point. That goes missing sometimes, and we look like a pretty dire, direct football team at times. And in other games, we play some beautiful football through the middle and push high and attack from the front. And I think that's probably his biggest challenge right now, to convince everyone, is that he can get us playing consistently fast attacking football, which is his apparent mantra, like we did for a lot of the first sort of 4 or 5 months of last season. Do that regularly, and I think what you've seen this year is he's brought in players to do that. He's obviously brought in, I think, fitter and more energetic players than we maybe had before, and he's trying to instill that in. As I said, it's still a very new team knitting together now, so you've got to give him another few months to knit them together and see where we end up this season, and really probably see if he can progress from this 10th, 11th, 12th position in the league.
As for this weekend, then, how much of a challenge do you expect Reading to present Bristol City with? Have you seen much of our season so far?
Not a huge amount, I must admit. But I think, the Championship's so tight, you see every week there's surprises and there's teams, beating other teams. I think there does look to be three or four teams down near the bottom who look a little bit adrift from the others. But no game's easy. No one expects Rotherham to go to Middlesbrough and get a point. And equally, we're probably going there as slight favourites given our form and your form. But I can't think there's much between the teams, I'll be honest. I think, there's a few little bits of quality here and there maybe. But, the home advantage and, the evenness of a Championship, it's usually a tight game. And it has been with our two teams in recent years, actually. So I'll be honest, I don't think it'll be full of goals from what I've seen of us both. I can see another sort of single goal win either way, like our last three matches have been, and I know some of yours have been as well.
We do tend to concede quite a few goals, so I mean, I'm not sure. I mean, you've got Andy Vyman, obviously. I think is he probably the main sort of threat for you going forward? I mean, I was going to ask who sort of the key player will be for you guys on Saturday.
No, I mean, Wyman started the season on fire, but he's actually been out a little bit out of form and out of favour the last couple of weeks. We've got four sort of men who play in the front line. We're quite a fluid lineup, to be honest. If you ask me to predict a first 11, it's quite difficult to do at the moment. But Famara Deju is our sort of main number nine. He's our sort of main target man. He'll probably start up front.
Yeah.
And it really could be any one of Matt Taylor, Andre Wyman, Jamie Patterson in behind him. Out wide, Nicholas Eliasson's the sort of man who's probably caught most of the headlines. He came in last season, didn't really play much, didn't get much of a chance, looked a bit fragile and a bit weak maybe for this league, but he's obviously done a lot of work in the last 12 months. He's come on, he's got a very, very good cross on him. He creates chances. I think that's the main thing. He's right up there most weeks on the sort of most chances created stats in the Championship. I think he had 7 chances created on Saturday against Stoke. So he's probably the one to threaten most. Coming in from the right wing, he's got a decent sort of cross-come shot, which you kind of know he's going to go inside the post at some point, even if it hasn't yet. Nicholas Larson's probably the one you may not have heard much about, but to look out for on Saturday.
Finally then, Paul, I mean, you mentioned you were expecting a tight game this weekend, but how do you see the game panning out? Can I get a score prediction for you for the game?
Yeah, so I think I can't see it being any more than 1-0 or 1-1. I'd like to think we can nick a 1-0. We've done that a couple of times recently. We did it at Brentford a couple of Saturdays ago, so it'd be nice to go back up the M4 and do the same again. But I think, a tight game like that, it really could go either way. Can't have a little bit of luck for one team or the other.
It's a tricky one to call for me. I can see it going either way, so I'll go straight down at the middle with a draw. Would a draw be a good result for Bristol City, or sort of, you know, do you look at games against sort of the bottom three?
I think so. I think we've tended to go on runs of defeats under Lee Johnson, so I think you're always wary having lost like we did on Saturday. You don't want to suddenly have another one and then maybe another one. And I think, just to make sure we don't get into a run, I think an away draw at this level, as you say, is always decent, even if it's probably a game we are, if we are serious about a playoff push, we should be looking at going and winning, obviously, given your position in the league.
Certainly from Reading's point of view, if that historical run of defeats pans out as it does, and hopefully we might be able to nick a win. But as I say, it could certainly be very, very tight on Saturday. My thanks then to you, Paul, for joining me on The View from the Town, and all the best at the weekend and for the rest of the season.
Thank you. Cheers.
No worries. It's now time then for me and Tom to discuss Reading's team news ahead of Saturday and pick our preferred lineups for the game.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at The Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/ The Tarlhurst End.
Welcome back to The Tarlhurst End weekend preview as we look ahead to Reading versus Bristol City this Saturday. Team news wise then, Tom, you were at Paul Clement's press conference this afternoon, as mentioned, at Hogwood, and there seemed to be a lot of interesting points regarding injuries.
Yeah, a few in a few hours. Say it's been a busy week for the physios, I think. The big one, I suppose, is John Daly-Bodvarsson's going to miss the game. He's got a back injury, which he apparently picked up against Hull, which was a long time ago now, but he's been carrying it since then, ironically in a challenge with Tommy Elphick. So Elphick's come back to take out his old teammate. So he's been carrying that. I think he's obviously missed a couple of games since then, which has been down to this injury as well. So he's gone to see a specialist today, Thursday, and they'll find out more. But it sounds like he's going to miss the next couple of games at least. The other ones, Manone's still out with an ankle injury. And then in goal as well, Yakula's doubtful. He's picked up a knock in training. So as soon as he gets in the team, he might be out of it again. And then Andy Yeardom as well is a doubt after picking up a knock. So it's going to be assessing him and Yakula before the weekend. And then I think still six more long-term guys are out. And the only one back in, I think, is Paul McShane's back available. So it's whether he can find his way into the team. And then Mo Barra is back now as well in the fold. So, I think it's 10 players likely to be missing for the game. And then it's still plenty of options. But, a couple of guys you'd probably want in your team if you had the choice.
It's slightly worrying that this injury just sort of keeps on building up. And as soon as some players come back in, some more get injured. I mean, as you mentioned, it's at least 10 players by my count. And that could be on the sidelines this weekend. So it's a packed treatment room. It's not really an excuse for Paul Clement. I'm sure many fans would sort of say there's obviously been times when he's had a fully fit squad and still hasn't got results. But, depending on the way you look at it, he's effectively potentially going to be without his best defender in Andy Yeardom, his best midfielder inside as a Talahi, his best striker in John Daly-Bodvarsson, and Antti Jokola, who's been in good form recently. Is there a bit of empathy for him there?
Yeah, of course, you'll see that, like, say, those four players, or maybe Minone if he wasn't injured, you'd say four of those guys would probably be in the team if they were fit, at least four of them. So from that standpoint, yeah, it's obviously frustrating, but I think there's still 19, 20 players still available. It's a huge squad. There's still plenty of options there. So it's not really an excuse, but obviously when you're in a situation like this, you really want a couple of those star names, if you like, ready to be involved, especially, obviously, like you say, Saïd was playing really well before he was out. Bodvarsson scored most goals this season. I think he's still ahead of Mate, I think. And then, the goalkeeper situation, having to change that every week is far from ideal. So there is sympathy there to an extent, but I think there's still far enough quality in that squad to be doing a lot better than it is, even with the injuries that are out at the moment.
I mean, the most concerning element for me is that goalkeeping situation, because, you know, with Yokola a doubt for Saturday, that's all three of Reading's senior goalkeepers now who've got injured at least once just 3 months into this season. I think Malone has been injured on two separate occasions, and it's not very common sort of to see goalkeepers get injured, and we've had three in 3 months, and it's the position you sort of want to be rotating the least. But did Paul Clement give any sort of reasoning for that? Is it something going on in training? You know, because to me it's quite worrying that that's the situation they found themselves in terms of goalkeepers.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's something specific in training, but it obviously is in training. So I think all those injuries have happened in training, not in games, I can remember any of them. So Yokola, again, a muscle strain in training. So I'm not sure if it's anything specific. Obviously, Manone's his ankle, so it's a bit of a different problem for him. And yeah, I think Yokola was injured quite a bit last season as well, if I remember rightly. So he's got a few problems there. It's frustrating for him because he's just got into the side now and he probably would have got a little bit of a run. But say he still might make it for the weekend, but you've got Walker luckily back fit as well now. So it's there's good competition there. At least maybe that's why he wanted three keepers. Maybe he wasn't sure about the fitness of a couple of them. But it's certainly a question that he's answering, I think, because like you say, to have three keepers injured already this season is strange and a big problem. You want to settle goalkeeper in the team as a number one sort of staple in this side. I mean, down the bottom, you want to at least have the goalkeeper playing every week, and that's obviously not been the case recently.
The finger pointing at Dave Besant potentially, but considering all those injuries, then Tom, can you try and pick a team for the weekend?
Yeah, it's like I said, it's tricky, but I would go Walker in goal. If Yokola's got any sort of doubt with his injury, I wouldn't have a goalkeeper in there who's carrying any sort of a knock. If he's fully fit, then Yokola can go in. But I think it sounds like he's obviously not fully fit, so I'd go Walker, and then I would go with a back four of Yadom. So again, hoping he's fit. If not, obviously Gunter will probably come back in, but hopefully Yadom can play a part. I'd bring Ilori back in. I don't think he'd deserve to get a drop particularly. Liam Moore and Blackett across the back four, and then it gets a bit interesting. Then obviously the central midfield, I think, has been one of the biggest problems for much of the season. I'd probably go 4-2-3-1 just to try and get Swift further forward. So I'd go with Bakuna, and I'd bring in Renamoto. I think he's clearly ahead of David Myler in the pecking order, and he's the nearest one to Bakuna, who can sort of sit in there and be a two in front of the back four, and then let Swift go forward a bit more, and then play Swift behind the striker with McCleary on the right. It sounds like Paul Clement's happy to move on with Barry now, so I think he should come back in. He's one of the best players in the team. Yep. Liam Moore said he wants Barry back in the team as well, so it sounds like he'll probably bring him straight back in, at least on the bench, but hopefully he starts, and then Baldock up front with Bodvarsson injured. So yeah, there's plenty of options there, but that would be the one I'd go with, a 4-2-3-1, and try and just play through Swift and through the fast guys up front, and hopefully cause some problems that way with a bit of midfield protection behind him. There's still a couple of options despite the injuries, and it's a tricky one to pick, I think, and I'll be very surprised if we got it bang on again, but as we don't think we have all season so far.
He's always springs a few surprises in his lineups, Paul Clement. I've actually gone for a 4-4-2 this week. We're actually a little bit different in our lineups for once, so I've gone for a 4-4-2. I think we started the season with 4-4-2, and I think actually played quite well in that. I think especially against Derby, we looked quite solid with that 4-4-2 before Clement switched to the 4-3-3. I've gone with the same back four and goalkeeper as you, Tom. I would mention John O'Shea quite briefly. I mean, he came in for Ilori last weekend, and again he didn't do anything sort of to say why he shouldn't be in the side. But I mean obviously Liam Moore's got the captain's armband for now, whilst Paul McShane's been out, and obviously Gunter's not got it anymore, and he's not playing anyway. But you know, if with Moore as captain and sort of Thiago Ilori probably being one of Reading's better players so far this season, it seems harsh to drop him. But you know, when O'Shea comes in, he plays quite well. So unless you sort of play a 3/5 at the back where you fit all three of them in, but then obviously Paul McShane not coming back to full fitness, so he'll want to get back into the side. So it could be interesting to see what happens in the centre of defence. In midfield, I've gone with John Swift and David Myler to come back in. We'll talk a little bit more about Myler in a minute, but and then Gareth McCleary and Josh Sims over the wing over someone like Mo Barra, who might potentially be lacking a little bit of match fitness. And then Sam Baldock and Yaku Mate as a strike partnership. I think Mate especially has looked quite promising in recent weeks. I mean, he didn't take his chances against Swansea, but obviously got those two goals against Millwall and the goal against Birmingham, so he's in good form. I think it'd be harsh to leave him out. But I mentioned Mo Barra there, Tom. Do you think that he will come sort of straight back into the team straight away? I mean, with this disciplinary issue seemingly resolved, I mean, there's always going to sort of be that history between him and Paul Clement. And there's just that little doubt maybe in the back of my mind that his attitude might not quite be right coming back into this. But, I mean, we did see last season what a threat he can be to this side.
Yeah, I think he's struggled for form ever since Clement arrived, really. I'm not sure if it was exactly that was the reason, but he seemed to dip towards the end of last season, then he's taken it into this season. I don't think he's scored a goal yet this season either, which seems strange, obviously, for someone of his quality. But yeah, it sounds very much like Clement's happy to move on with it now and park it and go again. Obviously, he was in his team last year, and we mentioned it before, there's plenty of options on the wing there, so he can leave him out if he wants to, but... it was interesting, Liam Moore sort of said Barrow is one of the best players and they need him back in the team as soon as possible. So it feels like the players certainly want him in there. And I think he's the sort of person that they need to have in the side. Even if he's on the bench, I think it would be a big boost to have someone like him to come on. Like you say, Josh Sims again, he deserves a start at some point as well, so I wouldn't be completely against that. But I think Clement knows this is... I say it could be his last game if it goes badly. I think he said it's his 100th game in charge as well as a manager. So to go 100 and then get sacked off back of 100 would be a bit of a blow. But yeah, he knows it's a big game for him, and I think he'd want to try and get all his best players in the team. And if he can get Barrow in, if Barrow's fit enough to play, it's another issue like you mentioned. But I think he's happy to put him in terms of the disciplinary reason. But it's just a case of selection with a couple of the other wingers now. But I don't think any of them can be overly disappointed if they are left out for Barrow this week.
We haven't mentioned Sonny Aluko yet. I mean, I saw you put a tweet out last week about it. I think it was his 50th appearance against Swansea, and it wasn't met with the best reception.
No, it wasn't. I think it's probably a sensible move. I don't know if the Reading knew it at all, but I think he came on for the last minute, didn't he, at Swansea, so that's sort of gone under the radar completely now that he's played 50 games. They usually put a little tweet out when someone gets to that sort of milestone, but I don't think they went for it this time. But yeah, 3 goals in 50 games is... really poor for someone of an attacking player, and yeah, I wouldn't be starting him on Saturday.
David Myler, as I mentioned, is someone that I've gone for in my lineup. I also went for him last week against Swansea, but I mean, he's been fit for a couple of weeks now, but just isn't being picked, which I find, you know, a little bit odd. I mean, he wasn't amazing before he got injured, you know, but I think obviously the likes of Liam Kelly and the Andrew McCoon are hardly setting the world alight at the moment. So I mean, if I was Myler, I'd be quite annoyed that I wasn't even making the squad. I mean, I just think, you know, he's the sort of character you need in that team right now. You know, someone who will stand up and be counted. And you've actually gone with Rinomota over someone like David Myler, I mean, which certainly isn't a bad suggestion at all. I mean, he's been in the squad for the last couple of weeks and might well deserve his chance. I mean, obviously, Clement's been picking Rinomota into squad in recent weeks as well.
Yeah, exactly. I think he came on against Millwall, didn't he, for a little bit as well. Yeah. But yeah, I think I went for Myler in my team last week as well. I just presumed he'd bring it back in at some point sooner rather than later, but obviously stuck with Rinomota on the bench again. But yeah, he spoke about him in depth really today in the press conference, and he's not injured. He had a bit of a knock, I think, the last international break, but he's been fit now for the last couple of weeks, and he sort of said that basically his performances weren't great when he came in for those first few months, and like I say, I don't think we can really argue too much with that. But yeah, he's sort of the person who you want back in the team, really. At this point, it's having him in there. If he's not even going to be on the bench, he's an international player, he's come in, and you have to think he can help this midfield. And he said he's been in training, he's been very professional, no questions about him, and he's just coming and doing his job. So if you keep doing that, eventually you will get a chance, I think. So that could come this week, but it just looks like Renamota's ahead of him in the pecking order at the moment. But at some point, you imagine that we'll probably switch around, and that could well be on Saturday. I think certainly we need to make sure it's not Swift and Kelly just in the middle of there, because it doesn't seem to be working. I think that's the main takeaway at the moment. I think you need, obviously you've gone with the two with Swift in a two, but that could well. I think Bakuna generally has been playing fairly well. So I think he'll probably play. But yeah, I think Myler, he will get me back in the team sooner rather than later, I think. But I'd probably just go over Inamoto this weekend on the basis he's been in and around the squad and playing a little bit.
I don't think you can ever sort of doubt Myler's professionalism. He's obviously a good character to have in that squad, and that's why Clement has brought him in. But, you know, his performances haven't been quite, you know, obviously he's been injured for a couple of weeks, but now back fit, so he certainly deserves that chance, in my opinion. But prediction time then, Tom. I can confirm you are unfortunately bottom of the leaderboard, about a quarter of the way through the season. We're just 4 points at the moment, but what result are you going to go for to try and start that charge up the table?
I think I've been bottom for the whole season, ever since the opening night, which I keep going back to, when I said 1-0, I think, and then Derby scored right at the end. Yeah, after I blew it last year and the last couple of weeks as well, the whole league. But yeah, on that basis that I'm adrift, I'm going to go for a 2-1 Bristol City win, and the hope that some of you might be a bit more optimistic and I might pick up some points that way. But yeah, I'm going to go for 2-1 to Bristol City. I think Reading might actually get something, but yeah, the way the home form has been going, I do fear it might fall into a similar sort of category. It might get a bit toxic around the ground as well if they fall behind. And yeah, it's hopefully prove wrong and Reading can get something, but I'm going to go for 2-1 to Bristol City.
I went for a 1-1 draw on the main show earlier this week, so I'll stick by that. So that's me being slightly more optimistic. And there's a part of me that sort of thinks, you know, we will get that win back on home turf, but then equally, you know, I think we could find it hard to stop a run of two defeats in a row. I think we'll be, but Bristol City lost last weekend to Stoke, I believe, and they're 11th in the table. So, you know, it's a game that could really go either way, and it's why I've gone for a draw. It's quite hard to call, but I mean, saying that, you know, Bristol City might end up winning quite comfortably.
Yeah, I'm not sure it'll be comfortable. I'm sure it'll be fairly tight. It tend to be. I don't think, obviously, last season we had the 4-0 against Ipswich, but apart from that, it's all generally pretty tight at home. And yeah, as I say, if they fall behind, then you do worry how it might be like around the ground. I think quite a lot of the fans have given up, if you like, on Clement now. So if they go behind as well, that will only fuel that. But on the flip side, I think they've had a whole week now for this game, and it's Clement knows how big it is for his career, really. If he obviously loses this job as well, it's going to leave him in a bit of a difficult situation. I think the players know as well, the 2 points adrift now of safety. So it's a massive game for them. You hope that they can turn up and produce sort of maybe a one-off. They've got no midweek game next week, so they can put everything into it, and hopefully that can work in their favour. But yeah, it's just, I think that prediction's probably more on the fact that what we've watched at the Medeski over the last year or so, it's not been particularly pretty viewing, but you never know. When they beat Millwall recently, I think they beat Hull, obviously. I think it's 2 Saturday wins in a row, maybe. I think I read somewhere, so maybe 3 on the spin would be quite nice. And obviously I missed the Millwall win, so I'd quite like to see him win again. So fingers crossed, but yeah, I'll stick with 2-1 to Bristol City and hope to be wrong.
It'll be an interesting one for sure. And all of the aftermath from the game, good or bad, will be covered on the main podcast at the start of next week with Mark Mayo. So keep an eye out for that. I actually joined Mark to make a rare appearance on the show earlier this week to look back over that Swansea game in more detail. So go back to listen to that if you haven't already. I mean, it was a pretty depressing to talk about another defeat, but it has to be done. I think we covered plenty of, we were talking earlier off air about it's been nearly a year, or it has been a year since we started the podcast extra, or I started hosting, and we've probably had about 8 or 9 wins to talk about, so it's been mostly defeats. The weekend preview of this show, we'll be back at the same time next week to look ahead to Reading versus Ipswich, the final game before the November international break, and potentially an even more crucial game in regards to Paul Clement's job. Speaking of Paul Clement's job, on tylersden.com, we've got the results of a couple of polls we did regarding how happy you were with the job Paul Clement is doing. The average is 1.9 out of 5, so very low at the moment. It's worth pointing out that the final rating that Yapstown got before he was sacked was 1.8, so actually slightly above the final Stan rating. We also had 73% of you said it was time for him to be sacked, which I'm actually surprised it's not actually higher at the moment. I think a lot of people are just quite apathetic towards the whole situation, not really bother whether Clement stays or goes, and the issues probably run a lot higher than him. One poll that is still open is our October Player of the Month vote, with the candidates being Ansu Iacola, Yaku Mate and Thiago Alori. So lots of content over on the website. On a similar note, Tom, what can we look forward to on the Working in Paper in the next week or so?
Yeah, so the press conference today, lots of good stuff from Clement, and Liam Moore spoke about the Leicester tragedy as well, so we'll have that up at some point. Then we've got the column on a similar note to what you were saying there from Simeon Pickup of the Tyler Sender, talking about how he thinks Clement's days are probably numbered, so that'll be going up before the weekend over on Wokingham.today, and then obviously all the game coverage and reaction as well over there and up on Twitter at Tom J. Crocker. So yeah, check out that.
Fantastic stuff. And yeah, that Liam Moore one should be quite good. Reading, it's nice to see him. Obviously, came through the Leicester Academy. I think he was born in Loughborough, so not too far away at all from Leicester. It was nice to see him go up to the King Power early this week to pay his respects. So make sure you go and check that one out. Thank you very much then, Tom, for joining me on the Tyler's Den Weekend Preview once again this week.
Thanks, Ollie. No problem.
No worries at all. And thank you at home for listening to this week's show. Here's to Reading returning to winning ways back at the Mansstad on Saturday. Come on, you Ars.
The Tylehurst End Podcast.
By Reading fans, for Reading fans.